Welcome back, podcast fans. I'm your host, Annette Hines, and this is Parenting Impossible, the Special Needs Survival Podcast. This week's episode is with Lisa Candera, who is known as the Autism Mom Coach. She is fabulous. You will love her blog. It is the best blog ever. And earlier this spring, we had the awesome privilege of promoting a webinar that she was doing. And I just loved her blog post called The ABCs of Surviving Survival Mode. She talked about allowing it to be messy, basics only, and committing to your essentials, where she talked about self-care usually being the first thing to go. So picking three things to focus on. I thought that it was great. I loved meeting her. You're going to love this episode. But I want to talk to you a little bit about why this episode was so meaningful to me this week. There are so many things that we have to make decisions about every day. And being a parent in general is so stressful. Being a human is so stressful. One psychologist says that we make, as human beings, upwards of 35,000 individual decisions every day on average. Can you imagine? I mean, I had no idea. And so no wonder that we are all suffering from decision fatigue, right? That's overwhelming just thinking about it. Now, add to that the enormous stress of being a parent of a disabled child or a disabled adult child, or, you know, put yourself in the shoes of being a caregiver of a disabled person or a supporter of a disabled person in some role or other. And think about the weight that that adds and the exponential amount of decisions that that adds to your day, because you're not only making your own decisions, but you're making decisions for somebody else. And I know what that was like for me. Those decisions that I was making for Elizabeth many times were so heavy. And some days they were a life or death decisions. And as we did crawl towards the end of Elizabeth's life, they were decisions about when to stop care. I have a sign in my home that a very sweet person who helped me decorate and give my home a little facelift after Elizabeth passed, Colette, thank you. Thank you so much. Shout out to you. There's a sign that I have in a prominent place in my home where I have to walk by it every day and remind myself. And it says, don't look back. You're not going that way. It's so important to refresh myself and remind myself that regrets don't do anything for you. You can't go backwards and you can't keep going over those decisions over and over again. They're done. And I think about being a business owner during the pandemic. Oh my God, I made so many mistakes. I was so unprepared for something of that magnitude. I didn't have the technology in place. I didn't have the skill set to deal with this. Some of the people that were working for me were like terrified. I mean, terrified. And I didn't agree with a lot of things that were happening. And you know, I was scared that I was going to lose everything financially. Also, couldn't take care of the people that we normally take care of. It was just impossible. I felt squeezed on all sides. You know, it's not like there was a roadmap or a checklist. And if you've been listening to me for any time at all, you know how much I love a checklist, right? and the government was not really telling us what to do. You know, they were talking to us about masks and booster shots and things like that, but they weren't telling us how to survive with our business. And a lot of stuff they did tell us to do did not work out so well for some of us. Didn't work out so great for me. I took out loans, but that didn't help me really. And I had like almost 100% turnover of my staff, which was really challenging. And so in talking about regrets, you know, I made a lot of mistakes, and I'll tell you, most people were not very forgiving. Most people did not say, all right, you know, we're all in this together. Most people just said, yeah, I just need to kind of do what I need to do. And, you know, I get that. We all needed to kind of protect ourselves and our families and figure out what we needed to do for us. Tough times. But, you know, I own that and can't look back. Just have to pick yourself up and do what you need to do today. In our family, we call that doing the next right thing. If what you did today was the wrong thing, you have to just do the next right thing. You know, last year, I had someone working with me who our working relationship came to an end, and it didn't end well. And we're in a legal battle right now, and we don't agree on how things should have ended. And that happens sometimes. People have disagreements all the time, but you do what you do. And again, can't look back. You can only do what is the next right thing. And so that's what I'm going to do. No regrets, just do the next right thing. You can't fix the past. You can only move forward. So here's the thing though. Whatever happens in my business, nothing will compare to the decisions that I had to make for Elizabeth. And I'm sure that many of you have similar experiences with the decisions that you make for your children, your loved ones, the people that you support, even the decisions that you're making for yourselves. These are much more weighty decisions. And, you know, sometimes we can feel like we are carrying 1,000-pound cement blocks on our backs and trying to walk through the world with them. And making that decision to stop care for Elizabeth, there was no guidebook. There was no roadmap. I still don't know if it was the right time. I still don't know if she would have recovered from that last pneumonia. I still don't know if she would have kept getting more pneumonias. I still don't know if we would have gotten 6 more months or 1 more year or 5 more years or what that time would have looked like. I don't know, but I have to stand with the decision that I made, with the facts that I had and the heart, you know, that was telling me what to do and the prayers, and with God by my side, no regrets, can't look back. I'm not going that way. What's the next right decision? So with all that being said, Lisa Candera is the autism mom coach, and, you know, her coaching program for type A mothers raising children with ASD kids is something that is enormously helpful for some of us who fall into that camp. And I think she can help a lot of us live without regrets and live in a way that we can take that next right step, because, you know, many of us struggle with some of these very things that she wrote about in that blog post that I loved so much, about allowing it to be messy, because we're afraid that if we let go, that the whole world is going to fall apart. Our world is going to fall apart. That if we take a minute for self-care, that our whole world is going to fall apart. We don't know how to survive, survival mode, you know? And Lisa's the one to help us through it. So please enjoy this podcast. I hope that this episode helps you the way that this interview helped me. Lisa's a gem. And I love bringing these special people into your lives. Hope they help you. And if they do, please share this podcast with someone you know that could really use it. We would love your 5-star ratings and reviews. We could really use it. And thank you so much. Here we go. And I'm here with Lisa Candera, and she is, oh my God, she is the Autism Mom Coach. What a great name. I love it. So Lisa, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks, Annette. I'm so happy to be here.
So I was doing my homework for the show, and I love to listen to your podcast and read through your blog posts, and was so happy to come upon your blog post for yesterday. And did it ever sing to me, best blog ever? I feel like I would have hired you instantly when I read that blog post.
I'm so glad to hear that.
I totally would have. I don't have a kid with autism, but I have a kid with some stuff, right? But it was titled The ABCs of Surviving Survival Mode. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. Lisa, tell us a little bit about your journey and what brought you to becoming the Autism Mom Coach. How'd you get here?
Yes, absolutely. So I, like you, I am an attorney. And so my son was diagnosed with autism. He's 15 now. It was 13 years ago. And prior to that, I'm also the sibling of a person with autism. Her diagnosis back then was PDD-NOS, which we now is under the autism umbrella, and really things made so much sense. Like, oh yeah, she eloped a lot. Like we just thought she was trying to run away. And so I've been in this world for a long time. I always knew I wanted to do something in it, you know, to advocate for my son, to advocate for other people. I just didn't know what. And it really hit me when after, you know, 10, 11 years of not, you know, white knuckling it through survival mode, I was really burning out. And it got to the point where my son was, you know, hitting puberty. There was a lot of change and transition. So the anxiety in the household was really going up, and then COVID happened. And so all of this being like a perfect storm, I was at the point of like, how do I keep on doing this? And so I did not at that point seek out therapy, because my thought was, I know what the issue is, or the issue I'm having, at least, you know, I believe that I did. And I really wanted a better way of handling the day to day. And that's why coaching really spoke to me. I found it first as a client. And when I started to use the tools that I was learning through my particular coach and the coaching program that they were certified in, I just wanted more. And so that's why I became a life coach. And then it was just a no-brainer that I would offer this service to moms raising kids with autism, because I know firsthand that there are little to no resources out there specifically for us. And I hear from moms all the time, and I have many moms who are therapists, who are my clients, who will say that they went to therapy, but there's something about talking to somebody who just gets it. Yeah. Right. So where there's no explaining, there's no judgment, and it's all out there. And I think that really lets people feel seen immediately and able to open up. And so that's what I do. Yeah.
Let's talk about a little bit more about the difference between therapy and coaching, because I think people don't get that, you know, therapy, it's clinical, and coaching is not. And so therapeutic interventions are where, you know, there's a lot of reflecting back, there's a lot of, you know, clinical intervention. And that is where people are, you know, kind of coming to, you know, diagnostic criteria, et cetera. Coaching is not that. Coaching is, you know, where someone is not looking at you from a clinical lens, and right. they are maybe offering suggestions, maybe offering you some tools, maybe saying, hey, you know, you might be looking for respite. Here are some resources for you. Have you tried this? You know, I live in your community. Your son's looking for a job. Have you, you know, tried the Applebee's down the street? So coaching is a whole different thing, depending on, you know, the very specific line that you're receiving coaching in. So can you offer your perspective on coaching?
Yeah, sure. So it's definitely not therapy. A lot of the clients that I do have do see therapists separately,
right.
but coaching can work beautifully, I think, with therapy, but right. I'm not diagnosing people, and I am not making decisions based on, you know, as a clinician with them, but there is a lot of overlap. You are talking about the situations in your life. I'm not doing deep dives into, like, you know, your relationship with your mother and what caused it. Like, there might be an idea about that and a recognition that that's a factor, but that's not what it's about. It's more about, where are you right now? What are your pain points right now? Where do you want to be, and how can we get you there? And so when I coach, I use a very specific tool that I learned in my coaching certification program. It is called the self-coaching model, and it is really based in cognitive behavioral therapy. So if you have ever heard of the think, feel, act cycle, it's the think, feel, act cycle, right? How we're thinking creates our feeling, and how we're feeling drives our action. And when you really have an understanding of how that's happening day to day, and then over time, you really have an ability to interrupt some patterns that are not serving you. So for example, I will have clients that come to me and say, I am so stressed out because I never know when the phone is going to ring and it's going to be the school. Right. That's mm-hmm. like, and I, what I say is, like, okay, there's the phone ringing, there's the school calling. Those are circumstances. This is from the model. These are circumstances in our lives. Our circumstances, phone ringing, school calling, your child's diagnosis, none of that causes our emotions. We're having a thought about it. That thought about, if they call, it means something bad happened, he's in trouble again. That's what's causing you to feel anxious. And then when you feel anxious, what do? You're walking on eggshells. You're catastrophizing. You're spinning in your head. And so when you're doing all of those things, you're just running on a chronic level of stress. And you're bringing that into all your whole day, all of your interactions, right? And when you're doing that over time, it's really impacting you and your ability to show up the way you want. That's why I have a lot of my clients will be like, I was doing fine. And this one thing happened and I exploded. And I'm like, yeah, because that stress has been building up and building up and building up. And so the first thing that I do in my coaching is really to bring awareness to what is happening, because we have 60,000 thoughts a day. And most of them are on the subconscious level. We don't even know what they are. And so, like, bringing those to light and really seeing how they're showing up in our lives.
Oh, so good, Lisa. I love it. That was such a great example for people to understand how coaching works as opposed to a therapeutic intervention for that.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
So you have patterned yourself as the life coach for type A moms raising children with autism. I love that. Mm-hmm. So many of us are type A moms and kind of have to be, right? If we're raising special kids, especially in this
realm. It definitely is a trait that pops up. Like, I don't see myself as type A, but, and then they'll like tell me what their to-do list is. And I'm like, well, I'm like, maybe you and I aren't using the same language, but that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I mean, even if we're not comfortable, you know, defining ourselves that way, we're forced into that box because that's what our kids need. So that's what we do. So getting to the blog post that you wrote, it really sang to me. As I said, I just thought it was the best blog ever. The ABCs of surviving survival mode, which so many of us run in and have run in for so long. And I know when I was raising my daughter, Elizabeth, for 17 years, and I still feel that way now, even with my 22-year-old who, you know, goes through so much still, it's so hard to get out of survival mode. And you really have to work at it. You have to work at coming to that peace, right?
Yeah.
And you've got these three huge points of, you know, how to survive. And I just really want our audience to hear it.
Yeah, let's talk about them.
If you do not hire Lisa after hearing this, I don't know who you are, but you just, like, I would have totally hired her the minute I read this blog post. So first, allow it to be messy. Yes, yes, yes. I mean, it took me way too long to learn this, but I finally did. So let's talk about allow it to be messy.
Sure. So I just want to preface this with this blog post, like so many, are inspired by real life, real life and my clients' real lives. And so, you know, we got to this point a couple of months ago where every kid in the world seemed to be sick and at home. And then there was spring break, and then their parents were getting sick. And then there was, you know, it was always something, right? And so my clients would come to the call and they would just be distraught, and they'd be like, my house is a mess, and I haven't done this, and I forgot my best friend's birthday. And it was just, and I'm like, okay, like that, yeah, right? And so that's, so yeah, one, allow it to be messy. And so I always say, if I'm going to decide to do something, I want to decide it powerfully. And so if I'm going to decide not to do my dishes, because look, it's not happening. If I'm going to decide not to do the laundry, if I'm going to decide not to, I don't know, send a birthday present, then it's a decision that I'm making powerfully, right? Like, yep, let's go all in. Yeah. So as opposed to like, I can't, this is happening to me. Because when we are looking at things from that perspective, we're just digging ourselves deeper into the hole of anxiety. So whenever we're viewing our life as happening to us, so I can't do it, I'm forced to do this, like that language in and of itself produces a chemical response in our body that fuels that stress state. And so, you know, making that decision, like, yeah, these are not the priorities right now. And so that is just how it is. So I know I said, and I was not joking, like my cats were feeding themselves at one point, and it wasn't from a self feeder. Like they had opened the closet, they opened the bag, and they're like, I guess this is how it goes.
Right? I did this great intro to a podcast at one point, I think it was at some point last year, where I was wearing a bathing suit bottom for underwear because I'd run out of clean laundry. And you know what? it is what it is. And I was joking about it because I couldn't get to the laundry. We were just way too busy. So
yeah. And I was like, listen, if my cats are going to live in this house, they need to learn how to roll. So it's fine. They're resourceful.
Yeah. We learned that lesson when Elizabeth had gotten really, really sick. And my husband, God bless him, was like, you know what? We're going to start sending the laundry out because we can't keep up with it at this point. Yeah. And I felt so guilty about it. Ridiculous, ridiculous. But
well, you know. So that's another, I would say a big part of my coaching is that when we start to get underneath all of these, it's like, of course you feel guilty, because we're conditioned as women to think that everything household and child related is 100% on our shoulders. And if it is, does not look good, at least from the outside or from Instagram, it's a reflection on us. And we've internalized that in so many ways. And so I just love for my clients to normalize things as much as possible. I will use my own examples wherever I can to just let them know that they're not alone. But I think that an important piece of this work is like, whatever you are thinking, those thoughts aren't yours in the sense that you didn't magically decide them. We are fed thoughts. We are socialized our entire lives to think a certain way, to believe certain things. Some of them we've adopted and we like them and they serve us well. And some of them aren't. And so I like to talk to my clients. It's like you're going through your closet and you have all this crap in it. You're like, so this one's from grandma, you know, I'm getting rid of this. Like, you know, whatever your thoughts are, but part of that is our social conditioning as women. Like, did we always hear our mom say something like, oh my gosh, like, you know, a good wife always has dinner on the table or whatever it is. Like, we've adopted this stuff, you know, even if we don't believe it, it's in the background. So when we're like ordering out for the fifth day in the row, or like the Uber driver knows us by name, we're like, oh, I failed again.
Well, you know, take with a grain of salt that 15th perfect picture of the lasagna that somebody made. I mean, it is what it is. Like, I'm not saying stay off social media. It's fun to look at that stuff, but just don't take it in as some kind of, you know, a judgment against you. You know, just take it as your friends are having fun.
Your friends are marketing, right? Like, on like Facebook, Instagram, we're all marketing ourselves in some kind of way, right? Like, I read this, I'm going to do a podcast on this, but I was reading this book called Anxious People. And there's this fantastic snippet about social media and, you know, with people's like fake online lives, like as opposed to their real lives. And I think that disconnect causes so many of us pain and judgment and self-judgment because there's this perfect out there and we can see it. And then we're just comparing ourselves to it constantly.
Oh, see, Lisa, I'm trying to be a little kinder and I'm saying to myself, oh, that's how they're doing self-care. They're just baking because they enjoy that as a relaxing activity. So I'm getting to number three, but okay.
Go ahead.
So let's go to basics only. Tell us about basics only, number two.
Yeah. So it's like, if you're, you know, in survival mode and if it can be rescheduled, or delegated,
yes,
do it.
Delegate.
And then, what will happen, because if it's already happening. So for most of us, we're not rescheduling our own stuff because our own stuff hasn't even made it to the list. And so when I say like reschedule things, it's like, if you have a mammo, I'm not saying this is a way of like, you know, just dismissing your own self-care, but I'm talking about like, you know, you're going to have a coffee date with like somebody from work, or they're like, this happened to me a couple of weeks ago. I scheduled a webinar to do for a nonprofit and something came up and I was just like, I could do it, but I really need this time to reset. I rescheduled it. Like, things like that. If you can delegate it, if Uber can do it for you, like let Uber do it for you. I mean, or Uber Eats, right? Grubhub, whatever it is. Other family members, I think like, I hear my mom say to me all the time, it's all on me, I don't have any help. But underneath that is sometimes they're not asking for help or accepting the available help because there's this thought, well, I could do it better. It'll be too much to over explain or something like that. And so, you know, basics only is like also like looking out for like who else can help you.
Yeah, that's great. I have so much I could say about that, but I won't. Because there's a lot of judgy people out there. And I had many a day when I had people judging me because I didn't, you know, show up to this school event or volunteer for that thing. And it took me a while to get over it, but I did. I got over it. You know?
Yeah. But it's so interesting too. It's like, who are you getting the judgment from? Probably other moms who were doing the thing because they were supposed to do it. And like, you were like not following the party line and like, I don't want to be here, but I'm here. So everybody should be here too.
Somewhere. Yeah. But also the teachers too, and the school administrators. Yeah. And actually that secretary that was always mad at me because I was the last mom for the pickup every time. Okay. Now, and it's funny because my
she wasn't appreciated.
She remembers this and she still tells me about that secretary who would also, because my daughter was always sitting there waiting for me to pick her up.
And she didn't appreciate your consistency.
She would say, Mom, Mrs. Slattery always used to say mean things about you under her breath.
Wow.
The things that our kids, when they were little, always saw. Okay. So number three, commit to your essentials. All right. Self-care. First thing to go. You were talking about that in number one, right?
Yeah. And absolutely. Also number two.
But yeah, and you know, this is the thing that I'm so upset at myself. I was so late to the party on this one, Lisa, but I finally got it. Unfortunately, it was a little late for me, and I hope not so late for the people that you're coaching. So tell me about this.
Yeah. So committing to the essentials, you know, there have been times where my son's been inpatient or he's been in the ER for stretches and we've been sleeping in ER beds and things like that. And so it's like figuring out for you, like, what do you really need in order to be able to function in a day? Like, what are your non-negotiables? And you need to pick them. You need to create at least three. And it's, to me, it's the act of doing it itself. It's like the act of saying, like, this piece of earth is mine. That's really an important thing. So for me, it's a hot shower. Like, I really do need that to reset. My sinuses feel better. My head feels better. I feel clearer. That's a really important piece for me. Hydration is huge. Huh. So what happens, especially when we're in survival mode, we're not sleeping, we're usually not eating well, we might be over-caffeinated, we're eating maybe chips and sugary stuff. We're taking in a lot of things that would dehydrate us, and then we're not hydrating on the other end. And what happens is, it's like a chicken and egg. That fuels the stress response cycle. We get crankier, we're less able, we're more diminished in our ability to handle the stress that, that is coming to us. And so, you know, making sure that you're hydrated, sipping water throughout the day, and then taking walks, just anything to sort of like be able to clear your head. So again, when my son was in the hospital, when he would be taking a nap, I'm like, I don't care if it's snowing, I don't care if it's raining, I am walking outside and just getting some sun or some version of it. And some fresh air.
That's so great. When we talk about self-care, a lot of times moms will think, oh, well, you know, I can't afford to, or I don't have time to go get a massage or get my nails done. I mean, you know, that's not what we're talking about. I mean, that's great. You know, that's nice. If people can do it, I think that's lovely. But we're just really talking about little patches of grass here, you know, just very small little.
It's so true. And those forms of, and the forms of self-care that I think that really come to mind are usually the kinds that other people are trying to sell to us, you know, commoditize. Like, did I say that right? Probably not. The massage, the bath salts, the special, I don't know, cream, whatever it is. But really, like, real self-care can be done anytime, anywhere. Like, I think one of the biggest forms of self-care that you can engage in is managing your own mind, seeing what you're thinking and making decisions about, am I hanging out with these thoughts that are sending me into the spin cycle, or am I going to redirect my mind? That is a huge piece of self-care, and it takes no time and it doesn't take a plane ticket to do it.
Right. Like, you know, prayer or meditation or, having a conversation with your partner.
Yeah. Connecting with other humans.
That's right. You know,
releasing the stress from your body. If that's movement, if that's jumping jacks, if that is something creative that you like to do, if it's laughing with someone, like, these are all ways, science proven ways, that we can release stress from our body. There's no bigger form of self-care than for us to regulate our own nervous systems. And again, you don't need a massage to do that. It's nice for sure. Like, who doesn't like that? Right. But it's like, I really like to get my parents like separated from the idea that self-care is time consuming or it's luxurious, because it's really, that's the self-care that's being sold to us. For sure it is. But self-care at its core, it's a lot of internal work. In my opinion, I think the biggest form of self-care we can all give ourselves is our own self-compassion. And so when the mean girl, the negativity soundtrack starts playing in our brain, is that we really intercede and, you know, set boundaries with it and start to repattern that cycle for ourselves. So, I have a podcast episode about this, but self-care, the way it's talked about sometimes, is like something like you do or don't have time for it. It's like a luxury to have. in my view, self-care is a responsibility, and it's our responsibility. No one's going to do it for us. And so I have reframed the way that I even think about self-care, because I think that when you're thinking about it as something like, you know, getting a massage or a manicure, and you're a mom raising a kid with special needs, or, you know, have multiple challenges, and that is just something that's not available to you, then in your mind, self-care is not available to you. And that's right. That's dangerous.
And there's another way that we're failing. So, you know, why do that to ourselves?
Yeah.
So I couldn't agree with you more, Lisa. And I just think this was just epic, pulling all of this together. In, you know, I mean, I love your blog anyway, but I look at it this way, and I'm sure this is, you know, how you're framing it as well. It sounds like you are, that it's our responsibility to show our children what happiness looks like as an adult. And so many of us just don't see it that way. We tell our kids to be happy, but we don't show them what it looks like to be happy and to take care of ourselves. And when, you know, and that's a profound thought. And again, you know, I came to this so late, but we have to show our children so many things. What does it mean to set boundaries as an adult? Mm-hmm. What does it mean to take care of ourselves as an adult? What does it mean to be happy and to have joy as an adult? It does not mean to run ourselves into the ground. It does not mean to sacrifice everything for other people. Like, we are important. We as people have, you know, meaning. So when they see us have joy, when they see us taking time for ourselves, they can model that as young humans growing up.
I completely agree. I think that we do have to send that message to them over and over, because to compete with the other messages that they will get, right? Like, in life and as they grow older. And especially for my clients who have daughters, what I hear is, I'm the mother, you know, it's my responsibility. I don't matter as much. The child matters. I'll be okay when they're okay. And so what I say, okay, you have a daughter. Does she matter? Yes. Like, okay. Will she matter when she's 15? Yes. You know, and it's like, okay, when she has children, will she still matter? Yes. Well, what if her children have special needs? Well, does your daughter still matter then? Of course. And it's like, then why not you? Like, we have this idea that once we become mothers, especially mothers of special needs children, that like we disappear. And in a way we do, because we forget about ourselves and we are just focused on our children. And I think that, you know, of course I understand it. I've done it myself, but I also think that, it goes too far, really. Yeah. I think, especially for the task at hand, like, this does not end when our children turn 18. Like, we are in this for the long haul. And in order to sustain ourselves at this level over that period of time, we really do need to take care of ourselves.
We do. So this leads me to my next question or topic, which is burnout, which I know is a big thing for you. You're doing, well, by the time this airs, it will be past, but you're doing this great webinar on overcoming burnout in 5 simple steps. Is it really 5 simple steps? But can we chat about that a little bit?
Sure. The steps are simple. And as I am not going to teach you how to, like, you don't need to learn anything fancy for this. Is it easy? Not necessarily, right? We're in these patterns that we've been in for years and years of how we think, how we react, right? So we have patterns of reactions and living in chronic states of stress. And so the 5 simple steps is really to interrupt that cycle, the burnout cycle. And this is what I teach in the webinar, and I'll be teaching this continuously. It'll be in my podcast coming up and future webinars that I will do. So if you get on my mailing list, and something that folks can do by just going to my website, if you get on my mailing list, you will be the first to know about all of this when I release them. But anyhow, the 5 simple steps are, 1 is awareness. So we can't jump off the hamster wheel if we don't know that we're on it in the first place. And so many of us are just going, and we're not taking a breath. We're not pausing. Like, the simplest question I ask my clients, I think, is like, how are you doing? And I swear sometimes it stumps them because they're like, yeah, I don't, nobody's ever asked me that. I'm not really sure. Yes. Right. And so it's awareness of how we're doing. It's awareness of like the thoughts, all of the soundtrack of the thoughts that we are thinking, you know, either consciously or subconsciously, that are driving our emotions, that are creating the stress in our body that leads to the burnout. So one, there's awareness. Two, there's acceptance. So acceptance of life as it is, right? There's a lot of pushing against it, arguing with reality, resisting what is. This resistance makes things tougher on us. Acceptance of ourselves, how we are doing, our emotions, how we're feeling, like without the judgment. Three is mind management, the ability to see what you're thinking, what it's producing for you, and to decide whether you want to keep on doing it. Because we actually can repattern our thought process. Does that mean that we will never think catastrophizing thoughts again? No, but we get to decide whether we want to hang out with them as much as we do now. Like, that's an actual decision. So that mind management. Third, nervous system regulation. One of the things that I teach my clients is how to map their nervous system. We have three states of our nervous system. When you're in your fight, flight state of your nervous system, you only have access to certain thoughts. Yeah. The world is falling, the catastrophizing, like that is where you are living. And so if we can see when you get into that, what your triggers are, what your tells are, when you're in that fight, flight response, and how you can anchor back to what is ventral vagal, the safe and connected social system, segment of your nervous system, so that you can regulate yourself. The better you can regulate yourself, you can co-regulate with your child. And then fifth, the most important, self-compassion, because without self-compassion, the ability to be kind to ourselves, none of it is possible. And when you take these five steps together, they are all what I call real self-care, real radical self-care, because we're the only people who have the ability to take care of ourselves. And so it's understanding how we really can do that is what enables us to shift from a burnout cycle into, you know, not burnt out, or at least to interrupt the cycle, or to not add fuel to the fire. So one of the things that I teach my clients is that when you are in a chronic stress state, you feel it in your emotions, like the simplest of things feel heavier, but it also impacts the quality of the actions that you take. So when you're in a stress cycle, you're going to be doing more beating yourself up, more arguing with reality, more living in the past, second guessing yourself, more living in the future, catastrophizing. You are going to be comparing and despairing. You're going to be gossiping. You're going to be complaining. You're going to be ignoring, you know, any self-care. So you add all of these low quality actions. And at the same time, you're not taking high quality actions that would disperse the stress, like paying attention to your nutrition, your movement, connection with other people, like things that would actually allow you to release the stress. And so when you get into this cycle of more low quality actions, less high quality actions, you're just feeding the burnout. And so it's like, what am I doing that's adding to this that I can stop?
Oh, right. My God, that's great.
Yeah. So you're just, so we're like, we're not going to go for, you know, from burnout to like, you know, roses and daisies, but it's like, where am I making this harder? And I can actually make a powerful decision to not make it harder on myself.
Yeah, I've read some of this before about, you know, your amygdala in your brain is like that middle place. And when you're in fight or flight mode, it's like the bridge that kind of shuts down.
Yeah. So rational thinking is offline.
That's right. It's like, it's totally like your computer, you know, that has just like shut down. Like the bridge is open. Like there's
you burnt the bridge.
Yeah, you burnt the bridge. You know, you know, so you're done. You're done. And you're totally like in.
You're not available.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like our kids. Like when we say this is, it is not a teachable moment.
You're getting an error message, you know?
Exactly. And
so that's it. you're done. And so you can't hit that rational moment until you calm that down, calm that down, you know, put that blanket, that weighted blanket around you and calm that down. So yeah, this is fascinating, fascinating. So like I said, if you're not already coaching with Lisa, I don't know what's wrong with you. No, just kidding. So Lisa, this is great. If you want to check out Lisa's website, her podcast and her blogs, she's at theautismmomcoach.com. And we'll have all of this in our show notes. And how can people work with you? How do you usually work? Are you doing group coaching, one-on-one coaching? What's your usual way of working with people?
Right. Sure. Right now it's one-on-one coaching. So I work with clients over Zoom. We coach for an hour a week. I give them notes about our session. So when I'm explaining some of these different concepts and the self-coaching model and the mapping of the nervous system, I want my clients to be like really fully present for that. So I like to, give them notes of that afterwards so that they can revisit that. And that's how we work together. And so how I do it is there are very specific concepts that I teach, but we apply it to your real life and to what's going on in your real life. And so that's how it goes.
So no more attorney work for you. Coaching is your life.
I still am an attorney and I still do work as an attorney, but I also coach. Okay.
All right. Well, this is awesome. Please check out Lisa's podcast. It's really cool. And I'm looking forward to catching up with the overcoming burnout, because this is a topic that is fascinating to me. I find myself in this situation every so often where I have to take a step back and, put the brakes on and kind of regroup. And I'm sure many of us over the last 3 years have been through this and have to go into recovery mode. This has been such a great podcast episode, Lisa. I can't thank you enough for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Is there anything that you really want to leave our audience with? I mean, I feel like we've gotten such valuable advice from you, but I want to make sure that if there's any last tips that you want to make sure that the audience has, that we just leave them with any last advice,
sure,
or any last tips?
Yeah. So, I mean, the one thing that has really been a guiding light for me and a mantra and something that I share with my clients all the time is that we really are our children's most important resource. I've said this before, but I think it's really worth just reminding ourselves of like how important we are, because I think that we do ignore ourselves and that the role that we play, so many roles as parents, as caregivers, as co-therapists, as advocates, like we are the experts on our children. And so taking the time to invest our own time and our own resources into ourselves is a radical act of like self-love and self-care, and one that we all deserve.
That's beautiful. Radical act of self-love. I love that. Thank you. I might steal that. Thank you so much.
Go for
Thanks
it.
Again
you are
for being
so
on
welcome.
The show. I love it. Thank you so much, Lisa. Have a great day.
You too.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I just wanted to take a second to say how much I appreciate you taking the time to listen to these podcasts. I'm having a blast doing them, and I hope that you're finding the content to be what you were really hoping. If you are, please take a second to leave a rating and a review. It's so helpful in getting this content out to people who really need to hear it. Thank you so much.